You're listening to It's All About Food. I was just talking about you. I was talking about you with my guest, who I will introduce in a moment. And I mentioned that when I started this program, I was 10 years ago, I was in a room talking to what seemed like nobody. And I don't feel that way anymore, because I know you're there. And I like talking to you. So thank you. Okay, before we get started with the main features of this program, I had a couple of announcements. Number one, do you remember I spoke with Jasmine Leyva maybe about a little over a year ago, I think. She was doing some fundraising to create a film called The Invisible Vegan. Yeah, it was a really good interview. If you have a chance, if you haven't heard it or you want to remember it, you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com where it is archived. Jasmine Leyva, The Invisible Vegan. Well, the film is done, and she is offering it in two ways. One, you could purchase it on demand at Vimeo, and it's like $3.99 to rent or something ridiculous. It's very worth the purchase, but you can also see it for free, and she is putting out one chapter at a time, and the first chapter is out on YouTube, Chapter 1, Know Your History. And it's going to be a great film. I watched the first chapter, and I really enjoyed it. So go to YouTube, and you can put in The Invisible Vegan Chapter 1. I'm pretty sure you can find it. And if you can't find it, you can email me at info@realmeals.org. I will send you some links, okay? Let me know what you think. The other thing is, here at Progressive Radio Network, there's a number, a new number. I gave it to you, I think, once or twice before. I'm going to give it to you again. 862-800-6805. What's that number? That's the voicemail. So if you're not listening in this moment, well, it is this moment for you whenever you're listening, but whatever time that is in the future, perhaps. If you want to leave a comment or a question, you can do this on the voicemail number, and then we can respond to it on the next program. 862-800-6805. All right. Here we go. I am sitting in the studio here with a very lovely person, Dr. Nadja Pinavaya. Did I say that right?
It was perfect.
Pinavaya. Hello. Let's give a brief little bio here so people understand how amazing you are. Nadja has an undergraduate degree in chemistry from King's College London and, wait for it, a PhD in quantum chemistry from St. Catherine's College, Cambridge. Prior to founding Euphoebe, Nadja was a managing director at Goldman Sachs in London. And you're asking yourself, what is she doing on this program? Well, you're going to find out in a moment. She subsequently founded Whitecap, working with a large number of consumer goods companies, reviving underperforming brands. She is a board member of the Institute of Responsible Nutrition and holds a certificate in culinary nutrition from the Natural Gourmet Institute. And she lives in Brooklyn with her husband and two children. And she's here with us now to talk about Euphoebe Healthcare. Hey.
Thank you, Karen. Lovely introduction.
Well, it's you. And it's real.
Yeah,
and
I'm pretty all about geeky being real. With that PhD.
Yeah. So we could probably take some time, maybe not, but I have a master's in chemical engineering. I love chemistry.
Yep.
But maybe that's for another time, talking about chemistry. And I don't even know if you're that interested in chemistry. I think we're both more interested in food, maybe, at this point.
We are today, yes. There's a link, right? The science links back is clearly at the foundation of what we're eating and the impact it has on our body.
Yes. And I also want to say, I like to say this, it's fun to say, there are good chemicals and there are bad chemicals.
Totally.
And not everyone realizes when they hear the word chemical that some of them are good. We're made of chemicals. We need chemicals.
Totally. We are. Biochemistry drives our behavior. We are a composition of biochemical reactions that are taking place in the body to metabolize, to drive our behavior, to drive, you know, what we want to do and don't want to do. Absolutely. We can break it down into those reactions.
Yes. Okay. Now, you have this amazing bio and this amazing trajectory or careers, and you landed with creating Euphoebe. So just briefly tell me how that happened and what is Euphoebe?
So let's start with Euphoebe is a program to make it easy to transition into a healthy way of eating, plant-based way of eating. We're doing the heavy lifting. It's meals, it's education, it's support. Why? How did I find myself here after a career in finance? It came out of cancer. So unfortunately, my father died when I was young. My mother died of breast cancer. And my mother-in-law was diagnosed with cancer about 5 years ago. And I thought, I don't want to go through this again. And I picked up Dr. Servan Schreiber's The Anti-Cancer Diet. Mm-hmm. I was really looking for something beyond the pending chemotherapy. I wanted to be helpful. I wanted to see whether food could provide help. And lo and behold, I started to read about, you know, the pinnacles behind our health and how today's modern diet weakens our immune system, provokes inflammation, and actually can progress cancer cell formation. So that was happening on the personal side. In the meanwhile, my children were 2 and 4. I'm Italian. I grew up in the UK, as you can probably tell from the accent. And I came here 12 years ago, and I heard from my children, "Mommy, Mommy, I want chicken nuggets and hot dogs," which for an Italian mom, that's just not what we normally eat. So that was all kind of crazy, and they wanted that. And the probiotic smoothie that was full of sugar, and I was learning, you know, what sugar isn't just empty calories. And then on the work front, you mentioned Whitecap. So we'd been called in by one of the big CPG companies, Unilever, to work on SlimFast, which was a weight management brand. So my role in that company was one of risk and understanding the product if we were going to turn it around. And so separately, I started to get into the chemistry and understood the toxicity of sugar and actually the dependency we have to sugar and highly refined grains. I learned that eat less, move more is doomed for failure, and that, you know, what the body does with the calories depending where the calorie source comes from, back to the chemistry. And I guess, and this was inspired by Dr. Robert Lustig, that biochemistry is driving our behavior. So if we really are asking people to change, to switch what they're eating, we have to help stack the odds of success in their favor by bringing them the highly nutrient-dense meals that dampens insulin, that increases leptin, which is the satiety hormone, which allows people to feel good while they're eating, while then dealing and helping them through behavior change. So that was the genesis of Euphoebe. Let us do the heavy lifting in the kitchen. Let us think about putting the meals together while you look after yourself for this transition period. Those meals that are nutrient dense are going to make you feel full, and let's provide you with the education and support on an ongoing basis to help guide you in this 28-day transition. It's like taking the children, the training wheels off the children after 28 days and seeing them flourish.
Exactly. I think it was Dr. David Katz in his book, Disease Proof, where he talked about that to some extent, where as humans, we have to first crawl and then we walk and then we run. It's a progression. It's a process.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. Okay. So this Euphoebe is like the walking stage, maybe.
Yeah, it's going on the bicycle. It really is.
Or kind crawling, of, walking, who knows?
That's right. It's kind, yes, of, we're helping, you know,
people get there
on the bike. We're holding them, and then we let them go. Because once you go through this 28-day transformation, even within the first 7 days, you know this, Karen, you start to feel so much better. But after 28 days, when we help people also, you know, we're doing three things. Help them get the sugar, the added sugar out of the diet, which is, there's a dependency, has them coming back for more and being hungry. We're switching refined grains for whole grains, and we're bringing in more fiber into the diet by reducing meat and animal consumption in favor of plants, because plants are full of nutrients and fiber. And so we're doing that kind of heavy lifting period. And after 28 days, you actually want to carry on eating that way because you feel fabulous.
Yeah. Okay, so most of my listeners know that I like to say, find your kitchen. And what I mean by find your kitchen, I want people to go into the kitchen and learn how to make food themselves and know what's in it. And I like to make recipes. They're all free on my responsibleeatingandliving.com website and all of that. But there are many people who don't like to cook, don't want to cook, don't want to learn how to cook, but want to eat better, and don't always want to eat out. And so some of these meal delivery services have been beneficial, and some of them come with ingredients that you put together, and some of them come with them being prepared. And yours, they're pretty much prepared, but you do have the requirement to enhance or embellish your meals with a side salad and some fresh fruit.
Correct. Think now, of us as doing that heavy lifting in the kitchen. We're making the main course and helping, again, teach people what is a side salad and to add them.
So it was very brave of you to let me try your plan because I'm kind of a snob about food. But I want to say that I did it for 6 days and lunch and dinner. And it came at a very interesting time when I had a very full schedule and my partner, Gary DiMattei, is out of town. So he's not there with me to either make the meals while I'm working or for us to make the meals together. So it was kind of a convenient time for me to try this. And all in all, I want to say the thing that surprised me the most was that I was very full. I was very satisfied. You know, everything comes in one box, and I thought, this is going to feed me for the week. But it did.
Yeah.
I mean, I did have my salads, but even I normally eat much bigger salads, and the salads, maybe I had, I'm not going to say, I don't know what I'm saying, but I just thought normally I eat more food. But anyway, the food that I had was very satisfying. And I made a list of what I had, and I wanted to mention the ones that I really liked.
Right.
So
I hope our chef's listening.
I really like the cashew cream in maitake tacos. Oh, I love maitake.
Yeah, the chickpeas in maitake is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, it's chickpeas in maitake tacos. That's fun to say, maitake tacos. Maitake is an incredible mushroom that is so healthy for us, but what's great about it is, I don't like to use this word, but it's very meaty. It has a great chew. It has a great texture. So that's a fun food. Another thing that I really loved was the root vegetable gratin. Now, this was my last dish or my last day. And what I loved about it was the bits of turnip in it. Mm-hmm. And we don't use turnip a lot in the United States. I lived in the south of France for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And the navette, the turnip, is very popular. And it's a great kind of background vegetable to give it some dimension, and things.
It's got a crunch to it as well. We love it in England. It's a good staple on a Sunday roast.
So those were my favorites. I think there was another one. Oh, the chickpea Caesar salad was also very nice. I put that on a big bed of greens.
Yes.
And it was very good. And if anybody's interested, you can visit my blog, days 1435 to 1440. What's 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40? 40. Yeah, that's 6 days. Yeah. And you can see what I ate.
Yeah.
My only criticism, but this isn't really a criticism for your program. It's just for me and my palate.
Yes.
Because I have a super clean palate. I don't use salt.
You don't use salt.
And I don't use oil. And I could taste the salt in the oil because my palate is very sensitive to that. But I understand when you're introducing people in transition, they need that.
Yeah. I was actually just having this conversation earlier today. So we stay – so on the whole, if someone is used to a normal diet, we hear the opposite.
Oh, of course.
We hear, like, actually, you know, I need to add a bit of salt because we make everything from scratch. So our own vegetable broth is made from scratch, so there's not a high sodium content. But obviously, if you have zero salt in your diet, there is some. But we also, we're actually going to be rolling out as part of a food prescription program. So we're very careful when staying within the sodium guidelines. So our chefs operate within a maximum allowance of salt per meal based on, you know, the recommended dietary guidelines of sodium, and are not, you know, will stay underneath that in all cases. So I think it depends kind of where you're coming from, yes, but I've heard
absolutely.
That. For those that don't have any salt, there is a tiny bit of salt.
But it kind of amazes me to show the ability of the human body to change.
Totally.
And here it is, I don't eat salt, and all my food is full of flavor. I can taste so much. So you have to understand that when you're eating a standard American diet or something close to it that's loaded with sugar and oil and salt, you're really not tasting your food.
That's right. That's right. And that's really, you know, the principles behind our meals that are to fulfill so many categories. You know, the main one is it has to taste good because food has to be enjoyable. And so that's kind of number one. But secondly, it's also to, you know, the food, what we're doing is we're going into the kitchen and we're packing nutrients, we're packing that fiber, we're packing in whole food, real food ingredients in a way that is and is easy and convenient. But they're serving, back to that biochemistry, they're serving a purpose. They're serving that purpose to keep you full. Because the real key, you know, Euphoebe isn't just a meal delivery program. When I was putting it together, I think I recognized the importance of having the meals do the hard work. Because if we can keep leptin, which is the satiety hormone, high, and insulin, which is the fat storage hormone, low, we're giving people the satiety, which then makes it easier for people to make a rational decision in the afternoon to say, I choose not to eat the cookie or snack on the mozzarella sticks or eat the pretzels because I'm not hungry. And in that case, I can now begin to identify what we call the addictive voice, which is that little voice in your head saying, oh, go on, just have one. One's okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can start again tomorrow. So ours is really a program to make it as easy as possible, really working on the science in the body to stack the odds of success in your favor to transition into wanting to carry on eating this way.
I remember that little voice, and I haven't heard it in a very long time.
What did it call you on? What was it, sugar? Or?
Yeah, I think so. The thing is, I can cook.
Yeah.
So even if I didn't have a box of some treat in the house, I could make it, and I could make it fast.
Right. Yeah.
So if I wanted a cookie, I could make one.
Yes, that's right.
And what happened for me is I started an all-raw diet for 2 years, and that voice went away so fast.
Yes. Yeah, it does. And that's the beauty of Euphoebe. Within 28 days, people say, and it's more normally the sugar voice. The sugar one is the one that calls the most. Dairy is a close second. And wine, actually, but we always say red over white if you are going to drink. But that, you know, after 28 days, even after really the first 2 weeks, if you keep the sugar at bay and you're not hungry, because the food isn't making you hungry, the food is actually keeping you full, it becomes so much easier. And I was drawing from my own. I told you that my father passed away at a young age. From an aneurysm probably brought on because of his smoking at that time, as most people did in the 70s. So I grew up hating smoking and then, as a fool, started smoking in my 20s and smoked for a while and could hear that addictive voice. I didn't, and I had that voice saying, oh, go on, you'll never be able to enjoy an evening out. You'll never be able to have fun. Your life's always going to be deprived. Until I read Alan Carr's The Easy Way to Stop Smoking, and I understood addiction. I understood that the brain is going to tell you anything to get its next hit, whether it's nicotine or whatever drug or even sugar. And that's what we're trying to do on Euphoebe. By keeping people full with great-tasting food, then we can help them through the education and, frankly, like 24/7 chat, coaching, helping some of those people that, you know, with a Haagen-Dazs comes calling at 10 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And just knowing there's someone there at the end of the line is so helpful to just keeping them on track, because you are asking people to make a transition. It's not always easy.
Yeah. The great thing is that once you recognize you have voices in your head that are telling you things that you don't want to hear, you can change those voices. You
totally.
Can erase the tape, re-record them, make your brain tell you what you want to hear.
That's
it takes
right.
work, though.
That's right. But
it,
you do. You
but
end
you
up having this conversation of it's the basal ganglia in the prefrontal cortex. So I hear you. And I used to literally say, I hear you. I know what you're doing. You want me to try and get another, you know, cigarette? I'm not going to do it this time. And that's, again, kind of some of those tools that we bring in to help people get the voice back into, you know, silent mode or a whisper.
Okay. So let's talk about your data. You brought in some data. I love numbers. I love data. So the thing is, it's very expensive to do any sort of study. And people ask, what is the ideal diet? And we really can't afford to do a study of every possible variation diets with a huge amount of people. It's just from time and resources and money, it just is impossible. So we kind of glean what we can from the information we have and do little small studies and try and make them as meaningful as possible.
Yes.
Now, you had some people try your program, and what happened?
Yes. So with the help of Dr. Jörg Hoopster, who's a cardiologist at Weill Cornell, we took lab work for people that was doing starting the 28-day reboot, so our Euphoebe program, beginning and end. And so we capture anthropometric measurements, so weight, waist, but also we were capturing blood work. And so we've had now thousands of people that cycle through the reboot. And the data from the weight loss side, which for me is, I mean, that's the thing that gets most people excited. What gets me excited is knowing that the weight loss is coming from the improvement in health. So the weight loss is pretty consistent of around just under 9 pounds, between 8 and 9 pounds in those 28 days, but in a tight band. So irrespective of your BMI, even at a healthy level, you know, you're losing 6 pounds to kind of 13, 14 pounds at the higher end.
Without feeling hungry.
Without feeling hungry. Actually, very recently, we had a trainer at Chelsea Piers, the head trainer, you know, fit guy, incredibly fit, 15.6% body fat. He ended up going whole food plant-based. Yeah, and you know, lean, 6'2", you know, incredibly fit guy. He lost 11 pounds over the course of, you know, 4 or 5 weeks as he went plant-based. And we... not 1 pound came from muscle mass loss. It was all his body fat went down to 10.6%. So that was really interesting. We hadn't monitored that. But on the blood work side, we've seen, on average, those with an elevated LDL, a drop of 41 points in LDL. That's equivalent of taking people off 20 to 40 milligrams of a statin. So you can get people off statins.
Without the bad side effects.
Without the bad side effects, exactly, that we're getting more and more exposed to now. We've reversed pre-diabetes in 28 days. We've reversed type 2 diabetes. We drop inflammation. So we know today that chronic inflammation is the precursor to chronic disease. Mm-hmm. Or even not even, I mean, in the short term, it's just a precursor to being sluggish, to being tired. And within 28 days, we see chronic disease drop down to levels that are not respondent of chronic. And the most exciting study we've done recently is we've actually done a study on the microbiome. So we did a microbiome test on a lady kind of before and after 28 days. The company that tested the microbiome is called Biome Health. And all of the good bacteria that you'd expect to see an increase of increased. We saw increased diversity and a reduction in the bad bacteria, which is reflective of inflammation, things like reduction of E. coli. So you're right, these randomized control trials are very expensive. More and more of these are taking place. But I think enough evidence is out there now that eating a whole food plant-based diet, there aren't that many things pointing that that's bad for your health. Right?
I can't stand when I hear doctors or nutritionists that claim that they're experts and they say, oh, there really isn't enough information. There's enough information.
You're just not looking. And it's just
a
question of how do you get people there? And do you get them there gradually? Do you get them there kind of fully? And you know, that's just the case. That's, you know, what are those principles? Let's cut the added sugar. Let's switch refined grains to whole grains. And let's reduce our meat consumption in favor of plants.
Sounds good to me. All right. Tell me about the name Euphoebe, what it means and where it's going.
So Euphoebe was a name to reflect euphoria and you'll feel better. And that's how people feel when they go to a whole food plant-based diet. Funny you should say that. We are just actually in the middle. We're 2 or 3 weeks away from a slight rebrand and a slight name change, which I'm not just keeping it from you. Actually, we haven't quite decided what it is yet, but stay tuned. It's just, I think it's hard for people to, once they've done Euphoebe, people, it becomes part of their vernacular. They say, I'm going Euphoebe, I've done Euphoebe.
I like the name, yeah.
I love the name. I love my Euphoebe. But it's hard, I think, for people to remember when they just hear it. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to make it easier.
Well, whatever the name is, I'll update this interview when it's archived so people can have both names and they don't get confused.
Thank
How
you.
Is that?
That's perfect.
All right. So when I look at the food that you sent to me, I could see the ingredients.
Yes.
But there's no information on nutrition.
Yep.
Now, there's no information on calories. And we could talk about calories because
yep.
I don't care about calories.
Yep.
And I just read your blog post on calories. So can you talk about that?
Yes, of
the
course.
The label.
Actually, in the part of the new branding, we will be incorporating the nutrition label. Mm-hmm. But when we started off, we didn't for that very reason. I think we've been brought up. It's very hard to unlearn the things that we've been taught, right? It's all about, you know, numbers of calories rather than the quality of those calories. So we wanted to bring people away from thinking about that, kind of bring them into this freedom state of just, look, it's about eating the food. If you get full, don't finish it. You know, and if you're still hungry, maybe you have an apple with some almond butter, unsweetened almond butter. But behind each meal it kind of brings me back to my, you know, quantum chemistry and mathematical days. It really is an optimization of the chefs optimizing for taste and diversity. the macronutrients, ensuring that every meal has enough plant-based protein. Because you have to be satiated. And I think that's a mistake that some people make in wanting to shift to a more plant-based diet. They just end up eating salads mm-hmm. without enough chickpeas, without enough beans, without enough plant-based protein. And then they go hungry, mm-hmm. and then they fall off the wagon. Yeah. So behind each meal is enough plant-based protein. And where we do use fat, we use more of a like cashews in there, cashew creams, nuts and seeds. We use a tiny bit of olive oil if we have to do what we call in Italian the sofrito, but it's certainly not high amounts of oil. The lunches vary between 350 and 450 calories as a target, and our meals are between 500 and 650. But we really try, and even though we are putting the nutrition label because people do want to know, do want to track, we're looking to educate people on that kind of coaching side to explain the importance of fiber and a 100 calorie protein bar, oh, which please. Is the thing that drives me bananas, mm-hmm. is worse for you than 200 calories of raw nuts that you should be
yes,
eating.
Yes, that's worth repeating.
There you
100
go.
Calorie quote nutrition bar.
Yeah, those protein
forget
bars.
About it. Just eat raw nuts and seeds.
Just eat the proper things. So
yes, it's funny because here in New York City, we have a requirement for chain restaurants that they have to present the calories and just calories on the food that they offer. So I'm not a big person who eats at chain restaurants, but there are a few that are healthy. Like Le Pain Quotidien.
Yep, that's right.
And they have to offer their calorie information on the menu, and it always throws me.
That's right. I know. It throws all of us, right?
And then,
even though with that filter, it does throw
I'm
us.
Like, really? That's 650 and that's 438?
Yeah.
And then I think, okay, these all look like healthy foods. I'm going to go for the higher calorie because I'm getting more healthy calories for my dollar.
More bang for my buck.
Yeah.
More value for money. Exactly. But I think, the calorie thing does throw people. And, for every person that thinks, 450 calories sounds like too much, you'll have someone else saying, that's not enough for me. So, there is some freedom when you get into eating this way that you can eat to feel good and you don't have to,
We don't even understand calories.
And calories is the thing that got us into this mess, that whole kind of low fat and the sweetness. Can we just quickly talk about sweetness?
Sure, but I just want to say, if you eat a bean, you're not going to get the calories that the can says on the label. It just doesn't compute that way.
Well, day two of our educational material talks about fiber and soluble and insoluble, how the body doesn't actually absorb it and mm-hmm. it gets passed
okay,
out.
Okay, let's talk about sweeteners.
So sweetness, I think, is manifest from this whole, having a lower calorie diet. But the sweeteners are as harmful as sugar. They still spike your insulin at the beginning and then impact the microbiome. And so, one of the guidance that we give is really trying, it's about resetting the palate that you spoke about earlier, getting people to break away from I have to have something that tastes sweet and going back to not being afraid of savoring savory.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, so how can people find out about you, Phoebe?
Well, the easiest way is to go to our website, which is euphebe.com. That's E-U-P for Papa, H-E-B for Bravo, E. Now you know why we have to rechange the name, euphebe.com. And I don't know if there are any kind of notes on the website, but please, anyone, if they have any questions, they should feel free to email me directly or call us. We love chatting to people. That's part of what we do. So they should feel free to reach out for any further information.
Okay. Well, Nadia, I want to thank you.
And
I want to thank you for sending me the week of meals. It was really a fun project for me. Again, if you want to check those out, you can visit my blog, What Vegans Eat Days, 1435 to 1440. Now, I want to bring on two more guests to the program. I'm very excited to have them on. And Nadia, please stick around.
Thank you.
My next two guests are Dr. Dean Ornish and Anne Ornish. Now, you may know these people. Dr. Dean Ornish is the founder and president of the nonprofit Preventative Medicine Research Institute, clinical professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and the author of 6 books, all national bestsellers. He has received numerous honors, including the Outstanding Young Alumnus Award from the University of Texas, Austin, and the National Public Health Hero Award from the University of California, Berkeley. And Ann Ornish is Vice President of Program Development at the nonprofit Preventative Medicine Research Institute. She is the creator of the Ornish Lifestyle Medicine digital platform, including Ornish.com and Empower, a turnkey learning management system that trains healthcare professionals and participants throughout the country. Ann Ornish has more than 25 years of advanced training in yoga and meditation and was featured on the cover of Yoga Journal. Welcome, Ann and Dean. How are you today?
We're great. Thanks for having us.
Excited to be here.
I am so happy to have you both, and I've been following you for a very long time, so it's just quite a pleasure for me to have this conversation. So we're talking about your new book, Undo It, How Simple Lifestyle Changes Can Reverse Most Chronic Diseases. And I read it, and it's fabulous. Thank you for putting it together. It has everything in it.
Thank you.
Now, my listeners, we talk a lot about food. This program is called It's All About Food, and we talk a lot about the importance of a whole food plant diet. But, Dr. Ornish, something that you have included for a long time in your program is things that are more than just food. And the thing that I want to start with first is love. I like to say on this program that we tune in love. And,
yes.
And you say that in your book. Let's see, I wrote it down here. And you wrote, this is a love-based program.
That's for sure. It's, it's often the thing that when people are starting our program, they might be skeptical, think, you know, you don't hear about love in mainstream medicine. And yet people inevitably find that it is the most powerful driver towards our motivation to make healthier lifestyle choices. So when we reflect on that motivation, we often ask, is the first question to start living our lifestyle medicine program, is what is your motivation? Because it's not enough to, you know, there's often an incident that's fear-based. You know, there's been some catastrophic medical events. Maybe there's a fear of family history of heart disease, for example, diabetes. But ultimately, in order to make this a really love-based and joy-based way of living, it comes down to who do we love and what do we love? And as we're moving in a healthier direction, making the choices that allow us to have more of those moments that make us feel the most alive with the people that we love, then this way of living becomes more sustainable.
Beautiful. This is a breakthrough in my mind because I've spoken to numerous doctors who kind of cringe at talking about spirituality and love, and they just want to focus on the data. But you found the data in encouraging lifestyle changes that include social interaction and love and spirituality.
It's true. Well, you know, love is almost a four-letter wording in cardiology circles, which is ironic since the heart is the symbol of love. And yet, study after study has shown that people who are lonely and depressed, which I think is, you know, one of the real epidemics in our culture, are 3 to 10 times more likely to get sick and die prematurely from pretty much all causes when compared to those who have a strong sense of love and connection and community. And I don't really know anything in medicine that even smoking doesn't have that kind of impact. But also it affects our behavior. You know, as Anne said, you know, we always assume people want to live longer, but we always ask, you know, why do you want to live longer? People say, gosh, no one's ever asked me that before. And because when I ask people, you know, why do you smoke? Why do you overeat? Why do you, abuse drugs? Why do you work too hard? Why do you watch too many video games? These behaviors seem so maladaptive. They say they're very adaptive. They help us deal with our loneliness, our pain, and our depression. So we've learned that it's not enough to give people information. You know, we're drowning information in the era of Google. Or to focus on the behaviors. We need to focus on these deeper issues. And then when we do that, we find that people are much more likely to make and maintain lifestyle choices that are life-enhancing than ones that are self-destructive. And what we've been able to prove and what we talk about in our new book is that these simple things, you know, eat well, move more, stress less, love more, boom, that's it. The more diseases we study and the more mechanisms we look at, the more reasons we have to explain why these changes are so powerful. And we were able to show for the first time that even severe heart disease could actually be reversed. Type 2 diabetes can be reversed. High blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity. We found these same changes when you change your diet and lifestyle. It changes your genes and turns on the good genes and turns off the genes that cause us to get sick. We found with Elizabeth Blackburn, who got the Nobel Prize for discovering telomeres, ends of our chromosomes that regulate aging, that we could lengthen telomeres and, in a sense, begin to reverse aging at a cellular level. And so the more diseases we study and the more mechanisms we look at, the more reasons we have to explain why these changes are so powerful and how quickly people can get better. And that's really the point of our new book. And so for your listeners, it's a way to really empower yourself to, you know, if you've been told you have to take, you know, drugs to lower your cholesterol and your blood pressure and your blood sugar for the rest of your life, we found that under your doctor's supervision, many people can reduce or even get off of many of these medications. If you've been told that maybe you need to have a stent or have your prostate operated on or be on other medications, then in many cases, lifestyle changes can be an alternative to that. Again, always under your doctor's supervision. And we've published these findings in all the leading peer-reviewed medical journals. And so I think what really sets our work and our book apart from so many others is that it's really based on these science that really empower people and give so many people new hope and new choices that they might not have had before.
It's all there. And the exercises, there are a lot of simple exercises that everyone can do. There's a lot of encouragement from both of you, ways to kind of fight the excuses that you have or the reasons that you have for not doing these things. It's really all there. But only certain people are going to be able to take a book and use it and put it to work. And then other people need more. They need help. For example, I am here with Nadia Pinavaya, who has a meal delivery program, and we just spoke about that. And you have the Ornish plan. And I understand that people can access this, and even Medicare pays for it. Can you talk a little bit about that program? Because I know people don't know about it and would be interested in it.
It's true. Well, you know, a lot of people are able to do it from reading the book. We get letters, thousands of letters. But you're right, it is always nice to have help. And so we've been training hospitals and clinics and physician groups throughout the country, and we've worked with a company called ShareCare that's helped provide the resources to do that. And if your listeners are interested in learning more about it, just go to Ornish, ornish.com. It provides a listing of all the sites that are offering our program, plus lots of information that's all free on there that can help people make these changes. And, you know, we're getting bigger changes in lifestyle, better clinical outcomes, bigger cost savings, and better adherence than anyone's ever shown before. It's really working. And so often doctors think, and Medicare, as you've indicated, and most insurance companies are now paying the cost of it. And so often doctors think, oh, you know, I can get my patients to take their pills, but there's no way they're going to change their lifestyle. It's too hard. And yet we're finding that 85 to 90% of the people complete all 72 hours of the training. Instead of a 10-minute visit, they'll actually pay for 72 hours of training, and it's a doctor, a nurse, a meditation teacher, an exercise physiologist, a dietitian, and a psychologist who all work together to help people stay on this. And after a year, even though the program is only 9 weeks long, after a year, about 85% to 90% of the people are still following it, much higher than people of just taking a cholesterol-lowering drug. And the reason is that the drug doesn't really make you feel better when it lowers your cholesterol, but changing diet and lifestyle does. And, you know, I'm continually impressed by how dynamic these underlying mechanisms are and how quickly people can feel better. We even talk about in our book a guy who had such bad heart disease, he was on the heart transplant list. And after just 9 weeks of going through our program at UCLA, he didn't need a heart transplant anymore. His heart disease had improved so much. And so for someone who has chest pain whenever they walk across the street or make love with their spouse or play with their kids or, you know, can't work for all these things, and within a few weeks they can do all of those, and they say, wow, what I gain is so much more than what I give up. These are changes worth making, not just to prevent something bad from happening years down the road, but because the quality of my life is so much enhanced.
That heart transplant story was very moving to me, and I was just wondering, of course, this probably isn't any data on this, but of all the people that need heart transplants, do you have an idea of what change in diet and lifestyle could do to their
need for
a heart?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, I'm laughing because sometimes people say, oh, why are you doing this radical intervention of, you know, eat well, move more, stress less, love more? Why don't you do something more conventional like a heart transplant, you know,
right,
which is about as radical as you can get? Costs $1.5 million, and you have to take drugs the rest of your life to suppress your immune system to keep the heart from being rejected. And most heart transplants are due to what's called coronary artery disease. And we have over a dozen men and women who were so sick they needed a heart transplant. We're able to avoid it by going on our lifestyle program. They did it because they thought it would help them, you know, do better when they had their heart transplant, and we're surprised to see that they improved so much that they didn't actually need one. And so we're just continually amazed by our body has this remarkable capacity to begin healing, even in dire straits of something as bad as needing a heart transplant, and much more quickly than we had once realized, if the lifestyle changes are big enough and if we can use them to treat these underlying causes. And one of the themes of the new book is that I'm presenting this new unifying, we're presenting this new unifying theory that although we're trained to view heart disease as being very different than diabetes or prostate cancer or Alzheimer's disease, we're now doing the first randomized trial to see if we can actually reverse Alzheimer's disease. They're really the same disease in different disguises, manifesting in different ways. And I say that because they all share the same underlying biological mechanisms, chronic inflammation, oxidative stress, changes in the microbiome, and changes in angiogenesis, and telomeres, and gene expression, and so on. And each one of these mechanisms is directly affected by what we eat, how we respond to stress, how much exercise we get, and how much love and support we have. And that's why it's really these same lifestyle changes that can reverse and therefore help prevent almost all of these chronic diseases, because they all really come from the same origin.
You've been doing this a long time, and I'm wondering what has changed over the decades that in your program and what you've learned about diet and lifestyle. Has anything changed?
Well, in our program, not much has changed, really. We added fish oil 20 years ago, or flaxseed oil for vegans, and we added small amounts of seeds or nuts a few years ago, even though they're high in fat, just because they have such a strong germinative quality. But it's pretty much the same program now as it was before, which is really very heartening. Anne, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, yes. I think that it's actually a relief in the sense of so many people, there's so many fad diets coming out really every day, every week, and it becomes such a barrage of noise. And you know, I know that people even in our field are still trying to sift through it. So I can only imagine what the layperson is faced with on a given day. So I think to the extent that they can be reassured, your listeners, to the fact that this same way of eating and living has only been proven through more studies that we've conducted as well as others in the lifestyle medicine field, to prove that just these same ways of managing your stress, the same basic five techniques that we've used for 40 years, moving more as simple as 30 minutes of walking per day, loving more as we talked about, which really is what makes this meaningful and therefore sustainable, and starts with loving ourselves. And so that is, you know, I think a lot of other programs are working from the outside in, and our lifestyle is transforming people from the inside out. And so I think, you know, nutrition and what you do, you're familiar with this more than most, is that there's just so much information. And really, to come back to this, a simple plant-based whole foods, we're not reducing things down to one thing like grapefruit or taking reducing it down to removing one thing. I think that that's so important to for people to understand that this is really about a natural way of eating, the way that we've evolved eating, a way that is the most colorful, the most flavorful, and the most familiar. And that to the extent that we can imbue these choices with meaning, and we start to connect the dots between when I eat this way, I feel really proud of myself, and I feel immediate energy that sustains me throughout the day, that it gives me the energy to be with the people at the energetic level that I'd like to be at work and at home, and that we can begin to connect those dots. When I eat this, when I go and eat it in and out and have fast food or food that I know is not healthy for me, I feel the opposite. I don't feel great. I feel regret, shame, I feel lethargic, etc. So it really has to happen from the inside out. We need to identify, to the extent that we're able to identify, why we're making healthier choices. And then we connect those choices. When I do these things, I feel better. When I do these things, I don't feel so great. So I'm going to do more, make more healthy choices so I can keep feeling better, to do the things
also,
that I love with those I love.
Agreed. And also what's changed, to answer your question, is that after 40 years of doing this work, I think our time has finally come, because there's a convergence of forces that finally makes this the right idea at the right time. On the one hand, the studies were showing that stents and angioplasties in stable patients really don't work that well, and yet lifestyle changes can actually reverse heart disease the way that we've described in our book. If you have early-stage prostate cancer, two major studies in the New England Journal of Medicine found that after 10 years, men who did nothing lived as long as those who had surgery or radiation, mm-hmm. and yet those treatments often cause them to be either impotent or incontinent or both for no real benefit. There's maybe one out of 49 or so men who have early-stage prostate cancer who actually benefit from the surgery, but the others often, you know, get maimed in the most personal ways. Dr. Peter Carroll, the chair of urology at UCSF, has developed algorithms to help identify who are those patients who really need surgery or radiation. And the others, instead of saying, well, just do nothing, can be said, you know, we actually did the first randomized trial in collaboration with Dr. Carroll at UCSF and Dr. Bill Fair when he was the chair of urology at Sloan Kettering in New York, that we can slow, stop, or even reverse the progression of men with early-stage prostate cancer and in all likelihood of women with early-stage breast cancer in some cases. And finally, in the case of type 2 diabetes, getting your blood sugar down with drugs doesn't prevent the horrible complications of diabetes nearly as well as getting it down with diet and lifestyle. And half of the population in the U.S. today is diabetic or pre-diabetic. And the complications and the side effects of diabetes are, you know, blindness, kidney failure, amputations, impotence, heart attacks, strokes, and so on. And almost all of these can be completely prevented if you can get your blood sugar down through drugs, through diet and lifestyle rather than through drugs, which we describe how to do in our new book.
So the good news is the information is out there. We know how to heal. We know how to reverse. We know how to prevent chronic diseases. And all of it is in your wonderful book, Undo It. And I appreciate, Anne, you bringing up how confused the public is. There's so much information out there, and a lot of it isn't good. And I just wanted to mention the U.S. News Best Diet Ranking. So I want to congratulate you on tying for the number one spot in Best Heart Healthy Diets. But my question is, why is the Mediterranean diet the best diet overall? I really wonder about this analysis, this evaluation. It does show how your information is getting out there and people are starting to accept it as your diet kind of moves up in the ranking. But this information is confusing to people.
Well, it is confusing, and that's one of the reasons that we spend so much of our time doing high-quality scientific research, you know, published in all the leading peer-reviewed and medical and scientific journals and so on, is that's the whole point of science, is to help people sort these conflicting claims out. And, you know, the panel of experts at U.S. News has rated our diet number one for heart health for, you know, 8 of the last 9 years, which is a nice validation. The Mediterranean diet is confusing because, you know, it's always easier to tell people what they want to hear. And people like to hear, oh, you know, fat is good and this is good and that is good. But, you know, there was a study that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine called the PREDIMED study that purported to say Mediterranean diet better than low-fat diet in treating heart disease. And yet, if you actually, and that made headlines around the world, but if you actually look at the data, what they found was that, first of all, what they called a low-fat diet went from 39% to 37%, hardly any reduction at all. They substituted fat with sugar, which is never a good idea. And even with all that, there was really no difference in heart attack rates. It was only a difference in strokes. And the strokes were lower because when you include some of the omega-3 fatty acids in your diet, but you don't have to get them from salmon. The salmon actually get them from the plankton. You can get them plankton-based or fish oil-based omega-3s. They help to prevent blood clots from forming, and 90% of strokes are due to blood clots. That's why the omega-3s can help to prevent that. But there was really no difference in heart attack rates. Now, clearly the Mediterranean diet is a much better diet than what most Americans are eating. But it doesn't go far enough to actually reverse heart disease. And the diet that we've recommended in our books that we've been studying now for 40 years, it's essentially a whole foods plant-based diet, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, soy products, naturally low in fat and in sugar and the so-called bad carbs. This is really the only diet that's actually been found in randomized trials to actually reverse the progression of heart disease so that instead of getting worse and worse over time, which is what usually happens, people get better and better and much more quickly than we had once thought possible.
So I think it's important to, you know, when we talk about diet And I think it's so interesting that we're always in these diet conversations. But really, Dean never set out to be a diet. This was a lifestyle intervention to reverse chronic diseases. And so I don't think there's any other diets per se that U.S. News ranked, including the Mediterranean, that are go beyond just eating or a diet per se. This is a way, a balanced way of eating that's part of an overall lifestyle. And it's not to be under, it's not just semantics. That really is part of the synergy that makes this way of eating so transformative. And so although we never set out to be a diet, people do lose excess weight, but more importantly, they gain health.
So one of the frustrating things for me with the U.S. News Best Diet Rankings, as well as many other articles that talk about diets and the way to eat, is they can't help themselves but say how difficult eating this way can be. And we know it's not difficult. And that's why I love one of my favorite parts of your book is Appendix A, 2 weeks of recommended packaged foods. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and I guess she can talk about that even better than I can, but you're right. You know, people say, oh, it's so hard to change. This is what I was talking about earlier. Doctors say, oh, I can get my patients to take their Lipitor, their cholesterol-lowering drugs, taking a pill every day. But boy, changing diet and lifestyle, nobody could do that. But if you actually take a look at the evidence shows that half to two-thirds of people who are prescribed cholesterol-lowering drugs are not taking them after just 4 months, and they are of proven benefit in people who have heart disease, especially if you're not doing any changes in lifestyle. And a third of people who are prescribed these drugs don't even get them filled. And why is that? Well, the reason is that fear is not really a sustainable motivator. You know, it is for like a month or so after you've had a visit to the emergency room or a surgical procedure. You'll do pretty much anything your doctor or nurse tells you for like a month or so. But it's not sustainable. We're seeing this in the political arena as well. But what is sustainable if it makes you feel good, joy, pleasure, love, feeling good, and social support are really what make it sustainable. And the paradox is that when you make changes in your lifestyle, like we write about in our new book, most people find that they feel so much better so quickly, it reframes the reason for making these changes from fear of dying or fear of something bad happening, which is not sustainable, to joy and pleasure and feeling good, which really are. And that's really what makes it work.
When it comes to Appendix A, having those foods available, we understand that, like Dean's saying, you're going to experience the greatest benefits and quickly if you make these choices to the extent that you're able to make these choices all at once and comprehensively. At the same time, you know, and for, I call the eating part, the food part, sort of the Trojan horse of the program, because it's the one element of the four that you have to do every day. We all have to eat at least a couple times a day. And so if we can lower that barrier of entry for somebody who's not, you know, someone who's going to go and cook one of the 70 recipes that we have in the book at home. We want to make it easy that you can go to pretty much any store, get any of those commercially available packaged foods that we list in that appendix, and so that it makes it easy. They're frozen, ready to heat, and they meet our nutritional recommendations. And so that might not be the... For some, you might be able to eat like that all of the time, but there's another, and it certainly is very helpful. We have many of those products in our freezer, and when you are in a pinch and time is short, those can make making the healthier choice much more realistic. And so we all need to have a few of those healthy options that we can just grab and go with. At the same time, there's another section that I also really enjoyed bringing to the world here, because you don't have to feel alienated, like you can't go out and eat with your friends and your colleagues the way that you normally would otherwise. That there's a whole section in the Eat Well chapter that talks about how you can order and eat this way in really any kind of restaurant, from Mexican, Italian, you name it, that it's actually easier than you might have thought. And what we find is that when we order this way, almost all the time when our food comes, because they didn't even notice that we ordered something, you know, somewhat special, that they're like, oh, I didn't even see that on the menu. Where did you get that? And we said, oh, we just said, you know, and we saw these things over the sides. They had these vegetables. We asked them to just, the chef, just put together your freshest vegetables. And that something comes out that is, usually people say, I'll have what she's having, like when Harry met Sally. And so we find it a really kind of fun way to go out and dine and experience new food and to turn our friends onto it and share.
Yeah, and also just to emphasize that the reason that we put the 2 weeks of prepackaged foods in there is to, Anne came up with this wonderful term called mindlessly mindful. You know, you don't have to think about it, just eat the food. And because these mechanisms we've been talking about biologically are so dynamic, if you eat this way for a week or two, especially if you eat this way most of the time, which is what these prepackaged foods can do, you're likely to feel so much better so quickly, then you're going to want to go out and shop and learn how to make the food. But we don't personally endorse any foods. We don't have any financial interest in any of this. We just did this as a service to show people how it's really not that hard to do at all.
It's genius. Unfortunately, we only have a minute left, and I could talk to you forever. I want just to briefly highlight some of the other favorite sections in my book. I love how you talked about meditation and gave so many different examples. Many people are like confused and afraid to meditate, and you've given so many different techniques and methods to make it easy. I loved how you talked about stress and how it's really a perception and we can change that perception. Brilliant.
Yes.
And I also loved when you talked about exercise and how it affects depression. It can help with depression. Lifting weights, lift your mood. So thank you so much for joining me, both Anne and Dr. Ornish. This was wonderful. I love your book and I wish you all the best. Thanks for helping all of us.
The pleasure
was ours. Thank you so much. We're really grateful.
Okay. Okay, that was Dr. Dean Ornish and Anne Ornish. And earlier we spoke with Nadja. What's your last name?
I'm still here. Pinavaya.
Pinavaya. Beautiful. Pinavaya. It's Italian. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you so much for joining me and have a very delicious week.